Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruryak. Will we now have a surge of COVID cases just ahead of us, or hot spots that pop up following this Memorial weekend? If you saw scenes of the beach parties, the pool parties, the all kinds of parties from the weekend, you are probably wondering. Maybe you aren't so concerned. Maybe you too enjoyed that kind of experience over the holiday. We do have some heat of the summer ahead of us. And what's that going to do to the virus? Dr. Dean Blumberg is joining us by phone. He is chief of pediatric infectious diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital. Dr. Blumberg, I understand you're in the midst of your commute, so thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Beth. I was trying to get too much done at once this morning, like many of us do.
Especially the Monday after a long weekend, which for a lot of people was really the first break, the first couple days free since all of this began in late January, early February.
Right. And so, we did have this three-day weekend, and we're opening up with a lot of the recommendations. And so I know people are really tired of being cooped up. I am too, but I think it's also important to remind people that the severe social distancing that has gone into place over the past couple months has actually proven to save lives. And so we've saved thousands of lives in California because of our actions.
So I think you're wearing two hats in this. On one hand, you're part of a healthcare system that is standing by to be prepared for any kind of surge or hotspots in general. It's a requirement of the state and the country. On the other, you are a medical professional, a person who's also seeing the scenes of what's happening. And as you said, understanding that people are kind of ready to break out of the cocoon that's been around us. So give me your view of what's ahead of us in both respects, as a person and part of a healthcare system.
Yeah, well, I don't know that they're actually two separate roles, because as a person, I want to make sure that the healthcare system is available for everybody, including me or my loved ones, in case I get sick or my family gets ill. And so that's why we did the social distancing in the first place, is because we were concerned that really the healthcare system could have not had capacity if we had too many cases at once. Well, now we do have capacity. We know that all the area hospitals have available beds and operating rooms and ventilators. So if we do get more cases, even if we get a mild surge of cases, I'm confident that we'll be able to handle them. And it is very difficult for people to live their lives. These restrictions have really caused economic and other hardship for people.
So will there be discussions this week that you'll be part of that look at the calendar and count, okay, the incubation period for COVID-19 is 2 weeks from now, that puts us into the middle of June, and then we have Father's Day weekend. Does it get to be as granular as that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really important point, is that, as you were saying, that over the weekend, we know that we had less social distancing and some people participating in crowded activities. And we're not going to get a surge right away, because the incubation period is up to 2 weeks. And so even in 2 weeks, we might get a mild surge, but then that gets multiplied again with another wave, with a second incubation period. So it'll take 2 to 4 weeks to see what the effects of any changes in the social distancing has occurred. And that's why it's very important that all these changes that we make, they need to be very small incremental changes, so that after 1 to 2 incubation periods, after 2 to 4 weeks, we see what the effects are, and then we can make adjustments.
But we have a couple factors here, one that's different. I'm looking at the heat timeline for the week, and the National Weather Service says it could get as high as 104 degrees in the valley today, up to 99 in the foothills. Wednesday and Thursday even up as high as 107, the foothills up over 100. What is agreed on right now in the science community about heat and its impact on the coronavirus?
So there's three factors to consider. One is that the virus doesn't survive as well in the heat. so it's less likely to be transmitted. Another is that the humidity is higher in the summer rather than being indoors with indoor heating, which lowers humidity. And that also means that viral survival is less in the summer with the heat. And then the third factor is people being outdoors. If people are outdoors more in the summer, which they may not be during this extreme heat, that's a great way to interrupt transmission of virus, because most of the transmission occurs indoors, and that's why there's more transmission during the winter. That being said, since this is such a novel virus and since the vast majority of the population is still susceptible to it, we know that we could have continuing transmission in the summer as we did in 2009 with the H1N1 influenza.
Did it dip then, though? Was summer noticeably less?
No, we didn't see that. We saw persistent and continuing transmission throughout the summer, and we really didn't see decreased transmission until a vaccine was available in the fall.
So another emerging piece of study on this is the transmission based on surfaces, variety of types of surfaces, from paper or plastic to fabric to hard metal surfaces. What's your understanding of that science, and does that help us right now? I mean, is that in our favor in terms of protection?
I think it is in our favor. We've known that coronaviruses in general, these are respiratory viruses. The primary route of transmission is via the respiratory route. And yes, we can detect the virus on several surfaces, but that doesn't mean that it's infectious just because we detect it. So I think what we're learning better is with the messaging is that the primary thing we can do is protect from respiratory transmission. The most important thing is the social distancing. The second most important thing is wearing a mask. The third most important thing is hand washing. And in last place, I would consider all the disinfection that's being done. Although, you know, it looks good publicly. It's a dramatic gesture to do publicly. But really, the primary issue is to prevent respiratory transmission.
I'm talking with Dr. Dean Blumberg. He is Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital. I must ask you about this emerging and linked disease in children. More and more states are seeing it. Do you know of this disease anywhere in the western states yet?
Yeah, I'm aware of at least two cases that have been reported from San Diego. I'm not aware of any cases in Sacramento to date, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw cases also. It's being reported worldwide.
So I really want to get to symptoms here. Symptoms in two categories. Number one, for children who might show signs of that emerging disease. Separately, symptoms of the beginnings of coronavirus, because after what we've just been talking about, we may need to be reminded to be on alert for what we now know to be the beginnings of COVID-19.
Yeah, so the primary symptoms of COVID-19 are fever, cough, and shortness of breath. There may be another variety of symptoms that occur with that, similar to other colds, such as sore throat or congestion or runny nose. But those are the primary things, are fever, cough, and shortness of breath. The children with the multisystem inflammatory syndrome, those kids, it's been described as a disease similar to Kawasaki disease, but it's more similar to like toxic shock syndrome. Those kids are really sick, and so those kids, I'm certain that those kids are sick enough that the parents will seek medical attention if any kid comes down with that.
What continues to surprise you or captivate you about what we're learning about this disease? And Dr. Blumberg, you were one of the first early on that was everywhere from local news to national news in terms of the awareness, the alerts, the education on this disease. So I wonder where your focus is now that we're months into it.
Well, I think we're going to continue to see additional clinical syndromes reported, just like this multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. We know that with many respiratory viruses, We can have a variety of rare manifestations associated with them. So we'll still learn clinically from this. We still have a whole lot to learn epidemiologically, as we talked earlier about what changes in social distancing practices, what effects they have on transmission. And then, you know, ultimately, we're desperate for a vaccine, and so we'd like that to be developed. And we'll probably have more than one vaccine being developed. And my hope is that these vaccines will be adequately tested and not rushed into use. I mean, the last thing we need is a vaccine to be rushed into use if we're not confident of its safety and protection. We really only have one chance to introduce the vaccine. If it doesn't go well, if these vaccines are rushed into use and found to be unsafe or not protective, that'll be a setback of several years, I'm sure, because we need confidence in these vaccines.
The scenes from the beaches, from the pool parties, from people gathering in parks or wherever they gathered over the weekend are going to get a lot of play, especially today and tomorrow. But in study after study, poll after poll, it seems that the majority of Americans are still believing the safest place is to be at home or to be restricted. There are still statewide stay-at-home orders in place. Can you give me just some anecdotal evidence from your view about how people are behaving? Are you seeing and hearing about people out and about or staying home? And what's happening in the hospital and doctor's office?
Yeah, I think in the hospitals, everybody's still following the recommendations. In the offices, everybody takes it very seriously. But in talking with other people, we know that some people don't. We know that some people take it as a political statement to say that they don't believe that they need to wear a mask. I see that when I go to, for example, I've been to the Sunday Farmers Market under the freeway and tried a social distance, and some people still aren't wearing masks in a relatively crowded place like that. And it appears to be like a political statement. And, you know, you can't deny science. You can try, but the science is still there and infectious diseases still occur.
Well, I hear people who are out and about without masks saying they're just not afraid. They're just really not afraid of the virus. So can I give you a 1 to 10 scale, with 10 being the most amount? Where do you think we should be in terms of fear right now?
Yeah, I think we should be at a 1 to 10, with 10 being the most fear. I would put this at about 8 or 9, and not just on an individual basis, because on an individual basis, if people want to be really selfish about it, then they don't have to wear a mask. They can get infected. The chances of them, if they're young, if they're healthy, if they don't have any comorbidities, the chances of them having a bad outcome are very low. But if you care about others in your community, if you care about your family, even if you care about distant loved ones who are, for example, in nursing homes, you know, if you can decrease transmission to everybody else, you can make them safer too. So if you want to be patriotic, if you want to be a good citizen of the community, then you should be very worried about it and follow all the public health advice.
All right, Dr. Blumberg, thanks so much for joining us. You take care. I always appreciate the conversations.
Thank you. Stay healthy.
You too. That's Dr. Dean Blumberg, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital. We're going to take a short break. We're continuing to share movie music with you throughout the hour. And up next, we're going to give you a few alternatives to sitting on the couch and going to your on-TV movie source. Stay with us. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.